Hello, and thank you for joining us today. I'm here today with Chris Axelrad. He is a specialist in hormonal, mind-body, and reproductive wellness using acupuncture, herbal medicine, therapeutic nutrition, and mind-body coaching. And I actually was introduced to Chris through a client of mine who was seeing him at his fertility wellness clinic for support in her IVF cycle through acupuncture and the work that Chris does in his clinic. And I am happy to say that she is now expecting twins, and I was delighted to have the opportunity to talk to Chris, and he actually contributed to the PCOS Diva website with an article that you'll see in the link on this page. But welcome, Chris. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. My pleasure to be here.
And we also had the opportunity to meet in person at the PCOS Foundation Symposium down in Houston this past fall.
That's right. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I had a great time there. You know, being from Houston was obviously very easy for me to get there, but you had to travel pretty far, didn't you?
Yeah, a little bit. But yeah, it was a wonderful day, and it was great to have representation from the holistic health world as well, you know, myself being a holistic health coach, and then you with a very similar approach, I think, to managing and treating PCOS, which we're going to talk about on the call today. Chris has a master's degree in traditional Chinese medicine, and I would love for you to tell us more about TCM and how it can help PCOS. So we're going to be covering that today, as well as talking a little bit about the mind-body connection in dealing with PCOS. And then I know I have had acupuncture treatments in the past, and it's really helped me with stress reduction and helped with anxiety and even quality of sleep. So I'd love to pick your brain about that. And then talk a little bit more about success stories that you've had with women trying to conceive with PCOS and getting support through acupuncture and TCM. So lots to talk about today.
Absolutely.
So why don't you just tell us a little bit about your philosophy when it comes to treating women with PCOS?
Well, Amy, my philosophy is really based on a very simple concept, and it really is the underpinning of any type of work I do with any patient or any client. And it starts from the place that we know, or that I know, and that I fully believe and have complete faith in the fact that the body has a very intelligent healing system built into it that is always trying to bring it back into balance. It's always trying to heal. It never stops trying. It never forgets the pathway that it needs to take. It's only things that we're doing, and not necessarily intentionally doing, but things that we're doing that get in the way of that healing system operating at its full capacity. Mm-hmm. Things we do, like certain foods we eat or lifestyle habits or even emotional patterns that can cause physiological changes that sort of become habits in the body. So looking at the big picture, then I can start to, and this is where Chinese medicine provides an amazing lens and an amazing viewpoint to be able to understand what's happening in the body from a holistic perspective. And I can start to help people uncover what are the areas where these blockages are, or what are the areas where their system is depleted and needs more support. And once we sort of begin to have those things resolve, the rest of the work, the rest of the balance is done by the body itself. We don't have to, you know, sit there and think about it or micromanage it. You know, we find one or two keys that unlock a couple of doors, and then from there, the rest of the pathway, the the healing system knows exactly where to go. And so with PCOS, as we know in conventional medicine, PCOS is largely evolved into a metabolic condition in terms of how people think about it, or sometimes it's also rooted in adrenal physiology being out of balance. In either of those cases, it's a very simplistic viewpoint, and sometimes the treatments of conventional medicine do work, so it's important not to discount that. But for a large number of people, those treatments don't work, and or may produce a lot of side effects. And this is where something like what I do can really, really help, because we're not going to just focus on, you know, the simplistic version of the story. We're going to look deep into the patterns of what's going on in your life and how you're feeling, how you're sleeping, what's your digestion like, what kinds of energy levels you have, et cetera, because all those things are significant to tell us the pattern that's happening in your body and the things that we need to get out of the way or support so that that healing process can begin, which, again, just because somebody has been diagnosed with PCOS, it doesn't mean that their body doesn't know how to be in balance. It just means that right now there's an imbalance.
Mm-hmm. So I think that we're all bio-individuals, and I know that your philosophy is the same way. I mean, I think that's one of the problems with PCOS is doctors kind of treat all patients or kind of approach treatment in the same way. And I don't think that that's the best way to serve women with PCOS. So you're looking at the individual and treating the individual. But are there some commonalities that you're finding with women with PCOS that maybe you could share some tips? I know that you had mentioned digestion issues. I think that's one area that traditional medicine doesn't really look at that much, with gut health. Do you have any tips or tricks around helping with, supporting your digestion?
Sure. Well, I think that I agree with you 100%. Everyone is like a fingerprint biologically, completely unique, and conventional medicine is really based on the premise, and the studies are done in such a way where, we have one pill, and we give this one pill to 5,000 people, and we give a sugar pill to another 5,000 people, and if the one pill that is the actual drug makes, a higher percentage of the people better that actually took the drug, then we know it works. But the study's done on this one drug. So there's all these people who take that drug who don't get better, but they're just sort of discounted. We just need to get at least 50 or 60% improvement to be able to sell this drug. With what I do, we're going to look at the big picture, and certainly digestion falls into that. I wish I could say there was a really clear theme with the patients that come in that have been diagnosed with PCOS, because and certainly there are some themes. I mean, we know the big theme is that a good number of them have high BMI, are either slightly or quite obese. Many of them are not sleeping well, or have what I call chronic, subclinical chronic inflammatory bowel disease, which just basically means that they've lived with sort of a stomach issues their whole life. They'll say things like, "Oh yeah, I've always had stomach issues. Sometimes I don't go to the bathroom for a couple of days, or, every once in a while I get, crampy or whatever with my stomach." And, it's not normal for that to happen. And hormonal balance can become drastically affected by how the digestive system is functioning, not only in terms of how nutrients are absorbed and processed, but
mm-hmm.
especially in terms of how substances are cleared from the body. And the bowel is one of the primary hormonal clearance pathways. But the bottom line is in my situation, when people come to my clinic, I always do want to know what their sort of, you know, conventional diagnosis is. It kind of gives me some ideas, but on the other side of that, I almost try to forget about that and just like start from scratch and really just hear their story and listen to what they're telling me, so that I can paint a picture that really explains what's going on. You know, not just puts a label on it, but really explains what's going on. Because sure, PCOS, we can look at that as like, you know, that's the most thing. You know, it's like you look at a plant and you look at a tree that is an apple tree. And what's the most obvious thing on the apple tree? The apple, right? I mean, you see the
mm-hmm.
apple, and it's the most, you know, it's the most colorful and it's the most beautiful part of the tree. Of course, it's also the most delicious part. But looking behind the scenes, you know, the branches, the twigs, the leaves, the roots, all of the systems that are going on behind the scenes that end up producing that apple. That's what I'm looking at. You know, I mean, the apple is obvious. Let's try to get behind the scenes. What's going on with the roots? Is there anything going on in the branch system? Is there anything where the water transport isn't happening correctly, or the sunlight isn't getting to the part of the plant that needs to get to it? Those are the things I'm looking at. You know, we're trying to really get into the roots of what's going on. And when we do get there and things start to shift, it's pretty amazing what can happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I see that. And I think a lot of it has to do with mindset, too. And I know part of traditional Chinese medicine, too, is kind of looking at it's not just the physical, you know, it's the mind-body connection, too. And maybe you could share a little bit about how make mind-body exercises or things that you do within your practice can kind of help your health and wellness as a whole.
Sure. Well, first of all, I think it's important to understand that, you know, even in conventional science now, it has become fully acknowledged that the emotional content that we're carrying has a profound influence on our physiology. In other words, and a simple example is if I put you in a movie theater and show you a really scary movie and hook you up to a bunch of monitors to monitor your blood pressure, monitor your heart rate, monitor the amount of adrenaline in your system and all this, just sitting watching a scary movie, which is not even actually happening, it's just something on a movie screen. So, you know, it's just something really happening in your mind that you're emotionally reacting to, but your physiology will change dramatically in relation to that. So we do the same things to ourselves all the time, just walking around and with our reactions and our anxieties and our fears and our joys and everything else. All these emotions have a physiological, biological result. So it's really important, I think, in the cases of all of my patients, for me to try to see if I can pick up on some themes emotionally that might be part of the picture. And
uh-huh.
if they want to talk about it and they are open to it, we can start to have that conversation about that. So, you know, some of the things that I'll give patients to do, especially if they really want to do that work, which, you know, I'm not a therapist, so I don't get into extreme detail and start to try to, you know, unravel years and years and years of abuse or anything else that's going on. But certainly traditional Chinese medicine is holistic medicine. So, I mean, holistic means we're talking about everything. You know, we're not just talking about food. We're not just talking about medicine. We're not just talking about lifestyle. We're not just talking about all these other things. And, you know, we're also talking about feelings. I mean, how you feel can affect the outcome of our medicine. So one of the most basic exercises that I give people is something I call the circle breath, which is really to help people tune into their breathing, to like help their breathing become more smooth and more more balanced, and also to help clear the mind out of a lot of mind chatter so that people can be more present to what's going on, including the feelings that they're having now. Being present to what's going on is what allows us then to have the insight to see what emotional patterns are dominating our minds and our bodies. And it just basically involves breathing very gently but deeply into the belly, so there's no force at all. You're not trying to take a really, you know, powerful breath like you might in a yoga class or something. This is more like just a deep but very natural breath into the belly, where you're getting a little extra breath in and you're letting your belly expand and fall, but there's no extra effort. And you just breathe in like that and then breathe out and breathe in and breathe out at a very gentle pace with a complete connection between, no pause between the inhale and the exhale. And you count. It's very simple. You start at, there's two ways to count. You can count 10 down to 1, or you can count 25 down to 1. You can count even 50 down to 1 if you want. You count on the exhale. You just count to yourself so you don't count out loud. And you just inhale and then exhale and count 10. And then inhale, exhale, count 9, et cetera, until you get to 1. Then you can start over at 10. And you can decide how many cycles of 10 you're going to do. And the idea with this exercise is that as you sit there and breathe and count, you know, your mind is going to be thinking. Your mind's going to be doing things. And so most people, especially when they first start this, will lose count or for several breaths forget they're even doing the exercise. But then they remember, oh, I'm supposed to be counting. And so the idea is that when you come back to that awareness of that you're supposed to be counting, is you just drop the thought. Whatever thought you're having at that second, you drop it. You don't continue it. You don't finish it. You don't even react to it. It's just like if you were crumpling up a piece of paper and putting it in the trash, that's what you do with that thought. Because what we're trying to learn how to do is stay with our breath and let the thoughts just go by. So we're not reacting to reactive to our thoughts. That's one.
Yeah,
and it can help tremendously to calm down the nervous system. Mm-hmm. Tremendously. And I just recommend that people do that at bedtime. You know, you're about to go to bed, sit on the edge of the bed and do 25 breaths. You know, count 25 down to 1 and just really get into a nice, calm place. That can also help you sleep better as well. So it's a really,
yeah,
really good exercise.
I love that. And it's a great meditation, too.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's based on mindfulness meditation, which is a very common form of meditation. But I use the counting because I think for most of us who haven't done a lot of meditation, the counting gives us something very easy and gentle to stay focused on.
Yeah, it's like an anchor,
just the breath.
I think.
Yeah, like an anchor. And there's an end point, too, you know. So we know we're going to start at 25 and we're going to finish at 1. Mm-hmm. So it's not just sort of this, like, amorphous sitting there and breathing and trying not to think or something. I mean, it's really easy for anyone to do.
Yeah, I really encourage divas that are listening to this call to try that circle breath technique. I know I hear from a lot of women, and being a woman with PCOS myself, I mean, I can suffer from anxiety, and exercise like that is great for managing anxiety. And I also...
Absolutely,
In the intro, I mentioned how I had gone to acupuncture for stress and anxiety, and I was amazed at the sense of calm that I experienced, and I would say it was like a release of endorphins, almost like a runner's high. And I was kind of hoping that you could share the philosophy behind acupuncture. I know that's a modality of traditional Chinese medicine, But maybe you can kind of explain, I know it has to do with energy meridians in your body, but maybe you can give us kind of lay folks an explanation of how it works.
Well, acupuncture has evolved over thousands of years, and I think the initial thought process for acupuncture is based on energy flow, or what's called the meridians. And, you know, before we had all of the modern biological equipment and the things to, like, microscopes and things to look at the tissues like we understand them today, people understood the body on a very macro functional level, and they were able to pick out how things flow in the body. I mean, it's really amazing because, you know, they didn't have a concept really in terms of the way we do now of a nervous system, but, you know, the nervous system is electromagnetic system. I mean, it's essentially electromagnetic pulses and electromagnetic signals traveling throughout the body in an instant. And the more we've learned about the body's biology, the more we know that the nervous system, the central nervous system in particular, has the most influence over how the body functions. From heart rate to hormonal outputs to digestive function to even immune function, signals from the nervous system are kind of the underpinning of how all of this is coordinated together. So I do think that with acupuncture, on some level, we are tapping into the nervous system as a circuit. Sort of like a circuit board, and you're modulating the flow of electrical energy through that circuit board, which then changes what it does. I mean, this is how all computers are working today. You know, the computer that someone's listening to this on right now, you know, all of the sound and the different changes and, you know, to be able to hear my voice are electromagnetic energies being modulated across the circuit board. So, but the body is an amazing processor of information, way more complex than any circuit board we've ever invented, and insanely more perceptive as well. So I think with acupuncture also, we're tapping into this perceptive layer of the body where, you know, you put a needle in one spot in the arm and another needle in one spot in the leg, and it will trigger a certain perception or perceptive reaction in the biology versus putting a needle in one hand and putting another needle at the top of the head, for instance, totally different response. And we've seen on functional MRI tests, which a functional MRI is like a live MRI. They use them for brain scan, and they can see in real time changes that are happening in the brain. And they've done some functional MRI studies on people undergoing acupuncture and have seen that, you know, certain combinations of acupuncture points have a unique pattern that gets triggered in the brain versus other combinations of points. It's a completely different pattern in the brain that's getting stimulated. Yeah, it is. And, I mean, when you think about what that really, the implications of that in terms of how you can potentially shift the biology that way, just using needles, and these needles don't, there's very, very thin, very painless needles. I mean, it's not like anything like getting an injection or getting blood drawn.
I'll vouch for that. They don't hurt.
Yeah, but the effects can be unbelievable. And when you think about PCOS, you know, PCOS is to a large, I think, hub of PCOS in terms of what's driving the pattern is the nervous system. The brain starts to get confused or overloaded with certain things and is trying to respond by secreting hormones and triggering hormones to try to get things under control, but it starts to get into a sort of a destructive loop or a unhealthy loop. And that's where the acupuncture can really make a huge difference. I mean, they even did a study on rats or mice. They induced PCOS in these mice, and then they did electroacupuncture on the mice, and the mice that received electroacupuncture, most of the markers of PCOS in their blood started to decrease.
Mm-hmm.
Just from doing acupuncture. And they're mice, right? So, I mean,
right.
You know, that kind of blows the theory out of the water that, well, you know, it won't work unless you believe in it. You have to kind of believe in it. It's just a placebo. Well, actually, no. I mean, there was a real neurological shift in these mice that caused certain markers to decrease in their blood that were trending towards, you know, being free of PCOS, essentially.
Yeah, I really encourage listeners that are suffering from the mild depression, the anxiety, the sleep disorders, to give acupuncture a try. And we're going to talk in a minute about acupuncture and Chinese medicine fertility. Chris is actually on the American Board of Oriental Reproductive Medicine. It's a specialty board dedicated to excellence in holistic fertility care. But I think that, you know, we hear a lot about acupuncture for PCOS and fertility, but I just want to, you know, make sure that I make the point that it isn't just for women who are trying to conceive. Maybe you could just speak to the women that you treat with PCOS and maybe some of the ways that their symptoms have been managed through acupuncture and Chinese medicine.
Sure. You know, and not everybody who comes to me with PCOS wants to have a baby either. I mean, I do get people mm-hmm. here who come who are just dealing with a lot of the unwanted side effects, or they're thinking, well, you know, I want to have a baby sometime in the future, and not right now, but maybe I need to try to start to get this under control now. So, but one story that I always remember is a case where this woman came to me, and she was in her late 20s, and she had PCOS, but it was like the thin type of PCOS. Like, she wasn't, you know, it wasn't the more common PCOS with being overweight. So she had very severe acne, all kinds of strange appetite issues and energy all over the place in terms of, you know, bouts of fatigue and things like that. And she was not having, according to her blood work, there was no problems with her blood sugar. So anyway, she did have, according to her blood work, some adrenal oversecretion of a hormone called DHEA, which is essentially a precursor for testosterone. So there were a lot of other signs and symptoms that I went through, and in the end, we started the acupuncture, and we started some herbal and nutritional supplements, and within 2 or 3 months' time, which, you know, sometimes with these types of situations, if someone's really locked into a pattern, it can take, you know, 1 to 2 months to really start to see significant results, although she felt better pretty much immediately in terms of mm-hmm. her sleep and her energy levels and her mood, and her acne started clearing up within a few weeks as well. Within a few months, she was really just pretty much acne-free. She told me she felt better than she felt in years in terms of her energy and her stress levels. Still, though, she had not ovulated. So I had her go do some more blood work, and the blood work showed we were definitely heading in the right direction. We did a couple more months of treatment, and she still hadn't ovulated. And at that point, you know, she decided for budgetary reasons, was like, you know, I think I've gotten what I need to, and let's just, you know, we'll stop the treatment for now, which I agreed with. We kept in touch over email, and if she had questions, we would just email each other. And then about 3 months after she exited treatment, I got an email that she had ovulated. She was real excited about that. And then 2 weeks later, I got an email that she had a positive pregnancy test.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was her first was her first ovulation, you know, probably in 8 months or 9 months. She would have about 2 periods a year before that. So you know, I always kind of joke, you know, it's like people who get real obsessed about their cycle days and things, you know, about when did I ovulate, and I always tell them the story about my patient that ovulated on cycle day 254 or something like that, which was this person. You know, she had, I think it was her first ovulation in over 8 months, and that she got pregnant on that ovulation. So, you know, all you need is a healthy egg and some sperm, you know. And I had another patient who had this will be brief, but she also had PCOS where her cycles would vary from, you know, 20 days to 90 days. They were all over the place. And she responded really fast in terms of, like, from the very first month she came, her cycle was, you know, under 35 days. And every month after that, for like 3 or 4 months, her cycles were coming monthly. And then I went on vacation. It was over Christmas break. And so over the Christmas break, she sends me an email that she's pregnant. And we find out later that she's pregnant with twins. And this is natural
wow.
pregnancy.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's a case where, you know, she regulated really fast. I mean, as soon as we started doing the acupuncture and started shifting her diet, her body responded like really, really fast, and things settled down quickly. It just took a few months for the right eggs to come up for her.
And then that's a perfect example of what we were talking about earlier, that your body innately, you know, can heal itself when given the right tools.
Right, exactly.
And acupuncture can be a great tool for women with PCOS. Just briefly, I wanted you to just kind of talk to us about the fertility cycle and acupuncture and where that falls in. You know, a woman that might be going through an IUI or an IVF cycle, how does acupuncture complement that?
Well, acupuncture, in terms of people using conventional fertility treatment, the way I look at it is that regardless of how you're going to be pregnant, number one, your body really has to be ready to be pregnant. And there's a lot of things that your body, to get your body in the proper shape or the proper state to have a healthy pregnancy. Because sometimes if someone is having difficulty getting pregnant, it may be because there's something about their physiological or biological state where their body doesn't want to be pregnant. In other words, their body knows, like, I can't do a pregnancy in this type of a state. So that's part of it. Part of it is sort of preparatory. It's like training for a marathon, you know. We want to get you in the best shape possible to maximize the chances of having a healthy pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but the second part of it is that when people are injecting, even taking Clomid, but certainly injecting these gonadotropins, these stimulant drugs to stimulate the ovaries, you're asking your body to do something unnatural. You know, you're exposing it to an unnatural level of stimulation, which is going to require a much stronger, more, you know, comprehensive, I guess you could say, response from the ovaries that it never has done before. So you're pushing them really, really hard to produce many, many eggs. In the case of IUI, you know, 2 or 3 more than normal. In the case of IVF, maybe 10 or 20 more than normal. So we need to make sure that your body isn't going to interfere with that process or overreact to that process, number one. And number two, we want to make sure that the body has a clear pathway to get nutrients and blood into the ovaries to help make sure that the eggs have as much nutrition as possible. The interference from the body comes from stress. You know, mm-hmm. Stress hormones are tremendously effective at blocking the reproductive cycle, the reproductive circuit, even just on a very subtle level. And, you know, some people, we all know people who are really stressed out who get pregnant, but some people don't, even if they have a little bit of stress. And that's kind of the biological fingerprint. You know, we don't know who's who, really. We just know that stress can really get in the way. And whatever we can do to minimize it is going to potentially help a lot. So what
I'm
find
so glad you said that.
Yeah, one of the things that I do, or one of the things that I see clinically here, is that I'll get people who have done IVF cycles, and then they come to see me because their IVF cycle didn't work, and they'll comment to me on what a difference the current cycle is compared to their previous cycle. They'll say things like, man, last time I had so much bloating and so much discomfort, and this time I'm barely feeling anything. And last time I was, you know, feeling really stressed and having a hard time sleeping, and this time I'm sleeping really well. Last time, you know, the eggs, I didn't respond as quickly, and now I'm responding much more quickly. And this is people with the same doses of medicine who say this. You know, I don't...
Mm-hmm.
And just generally speaking, I mean, I would say that in the vast majority of cases, people who come who have had previous cycles, the cycle they do here, their outcome is better. Their outcome's a lot better. I mean, I would, you know, at least 3 out of 4 people who come here doing IVF are end up pregnant. And
wow,
that's not an exaggeration.
That's great. Wow.
Yeah, that's not an exaggeration. Now, the key is that I also want... The majority of the patients that I see go to one IVF clinic here in town, a very large clinic, who is very, very good. They have a very good embryologist, and on their own, they have really good success rates. But most of the people that I see here from that clinic are the ones that already had a failed cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of times I'm seeing the patients from there that didn't fit into their success rate already, and now they're looking for what else can they do. And then they come here, and then we more often than not get very, very different results.
That's really encouraging. I want to just kind of close with letting women know where they can go if they're looking to try acupuncture or traditional Chinese medicine. What are some resources in order to find a reputable practitioner?
Sure. There's two main ones. One is ABORM, which is the American Board of Oriental Reproductive Medicine, and that is ABORM.org. There's a listing of practitioners on there by state. And the ABORM, essentially all those people have passed a very rigorous exam that gets into very specialized knowledge about endocrinology and also specialized knowledge of the traditional Chinese medical protocols around fertility and reproductive health. There's another site, the Fertile Soul, which is, if anyone's read the book, The Infertility Cure by Randine Lewis, she has a site. And she has also has practitioners listed there that have completed a program with her that she's trained. So there's also some really good people there, and most of those people are also ABORM anyway. So
mm-hmm.
You know, most of those people have taken the ABORM exam.
Your clinic is in Houston.
I'm in Houston, Texas. But I can work remotely with people. We do Skype.
Great.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. Just depends on how busy. I'm real busy, but, you know, if we can make it work, we make it work. And I do have an interesting story. I mean, I had a couple from Bolivia that just via Skype with me conceived after 4 months.
Wow. That's so cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, this was a situation where, I mean, she was the wife was beside herself, had been trying for so long, and basically they had a coworker that traveled back and forth from Houston to Bolivia. So he would come up here, and we would send the herbs to his hotel room via courier, and then he would take them back to Bolivia. And she would take the herbs, and we would Skype every couple of weeks, and we would just check up on how things were progressing. And within 3 or 4 months, she conceived. They had their baby about a year ago. So
that's fabulous. So
yeah,
if somebody
yeah.
wants to get in touch with you, Chris, through your website, axelradclinic.com, is that
mm-hmm.
the best route? Okay.
Yeah, that's the best route. We have our free consultation link on the homepage. There's a contact form. Our phone numbers are on there. And again, I mean, if you want a local practitioner, I'm happy to, you know, send you to people that I know. I mean, it's no big deal there. I'm not necessarily, you don't necessarily need to work with me. But if you do want to work with me directly over the internet, it's a possibility. We can do it.
Great. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day and chatting with us about this really important topic. And I think a real viable way of helping women with PCOS feel better and conceive. So thanks for joining us, Chris.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.